Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Pandora's Box. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd, 2015. Happy summer solstice, everyone. We're moving into that bright and sunny time of the year where people tend to feel a little bit better. And so, getting out in that sunshine really helps a lot. The question that a lot of people ask me, and it's a question I receive commonly from listeners, readers, and clients, is why do I keep choosing men or women who treat me badly? Why do I pick unhealthy, toxic relationships? Why do I continue to get involved with narcissists? And how can I change my patterns? The topic of our show today is why do I keep picking people who treat me badly? In my experience, I found self-love. We are on part six of From Self-Loving to Self-Loathing, so this ties right back into self-love. Self-love is the key to stopping destructive relationship patterns, but it often goes deeper than self-love. You might ask, what's deeper than self-love? Well, our wounds. Our early childhood wounds of abandonment and rejection set a precedent for our adult relationships. We will often draw into our lives people who bring our deep-seated wounds to light. Is this a blessing or a curse? Sometimes it feels like a curse, but in the long run, if we approach the endings of our relationships with conscious awareness, we can find the blessings. Abandonment and rejection are the most common deep-seated wounds that we carry with us throughout our lives until such a time we become very aware of them and can learn to stop abandoning and rejecting ourselves. If we have a core belief that we're not worthy of love or acceptance, we will unconsciously draw people into our lives who mirror to us our feelings of unworthiness. Ironically, those who in the end cause us to feel utterly worthless in the beginning will often shower us with what looks like love, acceptance, validation, and approval. If the people who come into our lives were really nasty to us in the beginning and didn't treat us well, we wouldn't likely get involved with them at all, unless we were really deeply wounded. There are many different dynamics that begin our relationships with others, called love bombing, typical with a narcissistic person, where you are pursued with great enthusiasm, showered with kindness, attention, and affection, as well as gifts, flowers, professions of undying love, and even hints or proposals of marriage. During the love bombing stages of a relationship, the focus is on how wonderful, beautiful, exciting, talented, and magnificent you are, and how lucky that person is to have you in his or her life. We can't blame someone for falling for this kind of seduction. It's extremely validating. However, when you've gone through the love bombing stage a time or two, you begin to become a little suspicious of the excessive attention. You learn to read between the lines. We often take people at face value, and so we believe if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it probably is one. But the narcissistic charmers of the world don't present themselves as they really are, deep down. Everybody wants love. It is said that every action one takes is either an expression of love or a cry for love. Some people cry out for love in very distorted and sometimes perverted and cruel ways. However, even these people's bad behavior emerge from trying to fill a deep-seated lack of love in their lives. Because we all want to be loved, we're all vulnerable to love bombing. Love bombing might look and feel like love in the beginning. And most of us are hungry for that kind of loving attention, and in the romantic sense, we love to receive that type of attention and romantic pursuit. We want to believe that we found the one who will fill that empty place in our lives. So when love bombing gives away to subtle undermining, jabs, criticisms, and unexpected behavior, it can be very easy to overlook because we want or need to believe the fairy tale reality. How many of you have done this? You may not always see who a person really is in the beginning of a dating situation. People put their best foot forward in almost all dating relationships, but sooner or later, the other shoe's going to drop. When we approach new relationships cloaked in a neat and tidy facade, it becomes very difficult to keep the facade in place. Sooner or later, it's going to crack wide open, and what has been hidden will rise to the surface. Everybody has hidden aspects or aspects that are not clearly seen in the beginning of a relationship or friendship. If we approach all relationships with this knowledge, we will be more authentic with ourselves and with the person we're getting involved with. Knowing how we ourselves put our best foot forward is also important. What is it that you want people to see? And what would you prefer that they don't see? What are you terrified that the person will see or know about you? This is an important question because if you wish to have a true, authentic relationship with another, you must first have one with yourself. You must first make friends with those parts of yourself you are terrified of exposing. Many people I work with are simply sitting on very low self-worth. They are terrified of being found unworthy by the one they love and admire. It's common that we sit on the fear, if he or she finds out who I really am, I will be rejected. And this is a very common fear, but it's a fear that must be examined and purged before a healthy relationship can be nurtured. If you're always afraid of being found out or found unworthy, you will try too hard to get attention, admiration, and validation that makes you feel like you're okay. This dynamic will often set you up for a love bombing situation. Love bombing could be extremely validating in the beginning before we realize it is the bomber's own attempt to be seen as a loving person and hook you in. This is often a cover-up for a dark side of the personality the love bomber is masking. Those of you who know about love bombing and have experienced it often think of the bomber as being calculating and aware of what he or she is doing. And this couldn't be further from the truth. It's important to understand that love bombing and narcissistic behavior comes out of a lack of conscious awareness. One is unaware of his or her own behavior dynamics. The behavior comes out of an unmet need trying to be met. The love bomber is most often desperate to secure a source of love, admiration, attention, and validation of his or her goodness. It comes out of a desperate need to be loved or have someone there, so the bomber doesn't have to face his or her own emptiness and self-loathing. We are often a target for love bombing, more so when we're attempting to fill up our own inner emptiness. When we believe a man or woman can fulfill us rather than seeking oneness with the source of our being, we're ripe for another empty soul to come into our inner world and play upon our neediness. If you've been attracting one unfulfilling, empty, or abusive relationship after another, it's time to look closely at your own attraction dynamic. I've had to self-examine on a very deep level to change my attraction dynamic, and this has involved quite a lot of time on my own and out of relationships. It has involved putting my toe in the water and pulling it back out when the water wasn't right. And sometimes it involved putting my whole body in the water and then jumping back out when I experienced some of the old dynamics coming into play. It's really all about the choices we make. We can't beat ourselves up for making poor choices, but we need to understand that relationship is a choice. And when it's not nurturing, positive, or supportive, it's time to make another choice. We often need to go into a relationship in order to develop better awareness as to what the attraction is about. When I talk about changing your attraction dynamic, I mean that it's time to start taking a step back and asking yourself, why am I attracted to that? We really can't help who we are attracted to, but we can develop the understanding that we have formerly been attracted to people who don't love, respect, or support us, and this is just simply no longer acceptable to us. The more we love, respect, and support ourselves, the less acceptable a lack of respect and support from a romantic partner will be. So the key is always to develop greater love, respect, and validation of yourself. And, you know, I say romantic partner, but this also goes for family members and friendships that you see those same patterns with. It's also important to tune into how you are feeling. Many of us are disconnected from our feeling selves. We've been taught in childhood and by society to ignore our feelings, and so we do. We ignore those feelings that say something isn't right. We ignore the feelings that say, I don't like how I feel when he talks to me like that. We ignore the intuitive promptings that tell us there's something going on that is out of integrity with our values. So many of you who are listening have been involved with a narcissistic personality or have a history of being involved with narcissistic personalities going all the way back to childhood. Narcissists are masters at denying their own feelings and also of getting you to doubt yourself and your feelings. The result is that most people involved for any length of time with a narcissist will begin to deny his or her own reality in favor of aligning with the reality of the narcissist. Well, because the narcissistic personality is so convincing, we often put the narcissist on a pedestal and see that person as having more wisdom or insight than we ourselves have. One of the reasons we do this is that the narcissistic person pretty much demands it. He or she needs to see himself or herself as all-knowing and as always right in his or her own mind. If you want to stay connected with that person, you will yield to his or her narcissism. You will allow that person to be right, to be the all-knowing, wise one in the relationship. And when you do this, you begin to buy into his or her ideas of who you are. In order to hide his or her narcissism and deep inner self-loathing, the inner darkness of the narcissist must be projected outward onto the nearest and dearest. This means every dark and ugly thing he or she suppresses within usually gets projected onto you, and you are punished for it. And this is the narcissistic relationship. This is why people who get involved with narcissists end up being confused, lost, suffering from extreme low self-worth, and also energetically depleted. When you don't fully embrace your own beauty, uniqueness, and value, you can be seduced into a world where your value is undermined in order to support the inflated value of the narcissist. The deeper truth is, this really has nothing to do with your value as a person, and everything to do with the need of the narcissist to undermine you in order to deflect his or her self-loathing and feel more powerful. In the world of human relationships, we will feel more empowered with some people and less empowered with others. Some people we feel good with and others we feel not so good with. I used to self-evaluate in attempt to understand why I felt not so good in certain relationships rather than simply putting distance between myself and that person. Now I'm deeply conscious of surrounding myself only with people who I feel truly love and support me. This is what we all need to be doing. We get to choose who we surround ourselves with. So why not choose people who treat you well? Of course, we need to be conscious of how we treat others. The door swings both ways. If you see yourself part in yourself, a part that is not very caring, loving, or supportive, then it's time to focus your attention on healing the wounds within yourself that are preventing you from truly being able to love and embrace others. And it usually begins with finding out what is blocking you from truly loving and embracing yourself. Perception is important here. Our self-identity is how we see ourselves and how we believe others see us. How strong is your self-identity? Do you have a strong perception of self? Or is your self-perception weak? When your self-perception is weak, you're vulnerable to others hijacking that perception and manipulating it to one's own need. The stronger your self-identity, the more capable you are of walking away from people and relationships that are undermining and abusive. Abuse is an overused term. It can be difficult to determine what abuse actually is. Formerly, we've thought of abuse as a physical act of violence or sexual inappropriateness. But we're learning that abuse is very complex. There's verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and now we're recognizing the term narcissistic abuse. Usually where there is an abuser, there is a victim. So we have that victim-abuser cycle. We can all be victims of abuse. But the question to ask yourself is, are you a one-time victim or a chronic victim? A one-time victim recognizes abusive behavior and removes himself or herself from the situation. A chronic victim tolerates the abuse or tries to change the abuser. The chronic victim may believe on some level that she deserves to be mistreated, perhaps because she was mistreated by a parent or a sibling, or she may feel she is deeply in love with her abuser, therefore the abuse is the price she must pay for that illusion of love. One thing we often don't realize is that abuse is not love. One who is inconsistent or who is consistently abusive or neglectful is not really emotionally capable of offering authentic love. Yet so many chronic victims hang out waiting for the situation to change or simply complain about how bad it is. I see this dynamic on my support forums for narcissistic abuse. A woman might post over and over what the narcissist in her life is doing to her now. She's getting attention and energy from being a victim rather than seeking her own empowerment by freeing herself from the abuser, both physically and energetically. Of course, this can take some time to do, and there's often addiction involved. When one is addicted to the abuser because of some false ideal of love and desperate need for validation from the abuser, it becomes difficult to leave the situation. For many, it can feel that the few times a week of being undermined and lied to is worth the few grains of attention and approval one may receive throughout the same week. People often ask the question, does he or she love me or not? Well, the real question is, do you love you? One thing I've learned on my journey is that everybody has the right to make his or her own choices, even if those choices are out of integrity, involve lying, cheating, and abuse. And this can be a hard pill to swallow because most people believe that he or she shouldn't be acting that way. They shouldn't have done that. People act the way they act. And frankly, we don't have any control over that. So if you really want to be free and empowered in your life, you need to start accepting that people are who they are, and they will do what they do, and you can't do anything about it. People who find it morally acceptable to lie and cheat will continue to lie and cheat. People who have double standards, who are, it's okay if they lie and cheat, but it's not okay if you lie and cheat, will continue to believe that way. You're powerless to do anything about it. So stop trying. Instead, make another choice. You either need to accept that person exactly as they are, the lying, cheating husband, wife, or girlfriend, or boyfriend, or you need to leave and find someone who has values and beliefs closer to your own. The one mistake people often make is adopting the belief that he or she is lying and cheating because I'm not good enough or there's something wrong with me. And we need to learn not to take other people's behavior so personally. This is a hard one. This was a hard one for me. Our behavior speaks volumes about who we are and says very little about who the other person is. It's typical that if you marry a man or woman who cheats on you, that spouse has a history of cheating and will continue to cheat in the future because this is how the person handles his or her deep-seated feelings of self-loathing or fear of intimacy. It has nothing to do with you and who you are. So try not to take it so personally. Instead, make a value choice for your own life. You may tell yourself, I no longer choose to be in a relationship with someone I can't trust. Fair choice. Get out. Move on. Find someone you can trust. Sure, you may have to go through the pain of separation, divorce, or whatever stands between you and your personal freedom, but this is the price we all must pay for empowerment. We must make empowering choices regardless of the price because we find that the price ends up being much higher when we don't. We're most often attracted to our deepest lessons in life. So when we seek to understand our attraction dynamic, it's important to understand what life is trying to teach us. Sometimes the life lesson is as simple as learning to make better choices. You know, someone might ask me, you know, why do I keep choosing this same person over and over and over again? This, you know, he's got a different face, but ends up being the same person. Well, maybe because you haven't learned to say no to that yet. When you notice it, when you see that behavior, maybe once you learn to start saying no to what isn't working, you start saying yes to what is working. We may need to learn to include our intellect and common sense in our romantic choices rather than simply acting from libido or unconscious energies. if you find yourself saying, I'm really attracted to this person, but I don't know why, it's in your best interest to explore the why. I was reading a really sweet biblical story recently where a man's teenage daughter was dating a new guy she really liked, and her father asked her to read Corinthians 13:4, where you've probably heard this verse, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, does not boast, it's not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. The father asked his daughter to replace the word love in this biblical verse with the name of the boy she really liked. And she did this. And later on said to her father, I realize this boy really doesn't love me, and so I'm not going to date him anymore. And the father was pleased with his daughter's growing awareness, but he followed up by asking his daughter to now put her name in the verse. And after doing so, she also realized that she had a thing or two to learn about how to be more loving. I thought this was a beautiful story. However, we must also add that love is discerning. For example, it is not self-loving to trust someone who has proven himself to be untrustworthy. If you're feeling attracted to someone but don't know why, put his or her name in the biblical verse and see if it fits. You can Google love is patient, love is kind, and that'll bring that verse up. It's understandable that we would be attracted to someone who is truly loving, caring, and supportive. But if you are a woman who is attracted to bad boys, it's worth exploring what is so attractive about being with someone who is completely unconscious of his dark side. And this goes for you men who are acting purely on physical attraction without putting any emphasis on the character of the woman that you're attracted to. A woman who gets by on sexual attraction alone will often seek sexual attention from many men. So don't be surprised if you end up feeling insecure and jealous when the woman you are into is into many others as well. And same thing with men. Even if that person tells you that you're the only one. So we've got to look deeper than appearances when selecting a mate. And we have to look deeper than attraction. I've had to learn this the hard way. If I was attracted to a man in the past, that was all I needed to get involved with him. But now I explore my attractions with much greater conscious awareness. What kind of man is he? Does he walk his talk? Is he honest? Is he capable of truly loving, honoring, and supporting me? Is he a man I feel I can love, honor, and support? Do I respect and admire him? Is he stable and able to support himself on all levels? What is his relationship history like? How does he talk about his exes? Is he single? Is he emotionally available? Is he a father? And if he is, what kind of father is he? Does he have friends? Does he have addictions that I would consider unhealthy? How many of you have forgotten to ask those important questions? Are you running on physical attraction alone? If you're hot for him or hot for her, is that the only thing drawing you in? If so, you're asking for trouble. Sexual attraction is very animalistic and short-lived. If there's no underlying emotional substance or foundation. Yes, it can be exciting in the beginning, but it can also throw you completely off balance if you're not being honest with yourself. Many people believe their hot sexual chemistry is a preview of coming attractions. of what their relationship will be like. They believe they will constantly be riding the waves of blissful ecstasy, and this is love. What it really is a brief sexual affair that will likely end or change when the newness wears off. Both partners trying to get the excitement back, but without emotional substance, honesty, and a genuine connection. It's a shallow bond. It's so important that we are honest with ourselves. Sex without intimacy is just sex. True intimacy is a willingness to see and be seen on the deepest levels. It's full disclosure. You allow yourself to be seen completely, and so does your partner. You are able to share in sacred space without either one of you feeling the need to run or shut down emotionally. You are both capable of remaining emotionally open, and in that space of deep connection that comes out of the openness. Many people in narcissistic relationships tell me they feel more connected to the narcissist in their life than they ever have with anyone. And this can be really confusing. But I would invite you to consider that what you're feeling is not a true emotional connection, but rather either sexual chemistry or a matching psychosis. And when I say matching psychosis, I mean that you both may have the same level of emotional immaturity, insecurity, fear of intimacy, attachment disorder, fear of abandonment, or all of the above. When we meet someone with the same level of psychosis, there's an attraction that is based on a subconscious desire to heal your own psychosis. And I don't say this to pathologize you, but rather to get you looking honestly at yourself. We all have deep-seated issues that will stay with us through our lifetime if we don't take the time to pull them out and look at them. We heal what we become aware of, and nature has a way of bringing us one opportunity after another for our healing. If we have a string of toxic relationships in our lives, we're either missing the healing opportunity in our relationships, or we're actually doing quite a lot of healing. We may find our relationships are getting less and less toxic until they're not toxic at all. And this is healing. When your relationships begin to get even more toxic, it's probably a sign that you need a bigger whack in the head to wake up from your unconscious slumber. The whack over the head we experience is actually a call to awaken. We either heed or ignore the call. If we ignore the call, we get a louder call. We can either become victims of the call to awaken, can surrender to it, and allow it to teach us. The choice is ours. When we choose to be victims of the many bad relationships we experience, we spend our time, attention, and energy focused on the abuser, the one who has wronged us, rather than looking at how we constantly put ourselves in the position of seeking love from someone who is not truly capable of giving us what we want, need, and desire. Picking romantic partners and friends who treat us badly ends up being more about the one doing the picking than the one treating you badly. And this is because you are the one who gets to either say yes or no to that relationship, depending on how you feel when you're in it. If you feel excited, happy, and content most of the time, but there are times the relationship is downright horrible, then you may find yourself in a situation of tolerating the horrible for a mostly good relationship, or what you perceive to be a mostly good relationship. Of course, no relationship is good 100% of the time. We have to allow for conflict and communication challenges. It's completely up to you to decide what is worth tolerating. if your relationship is 50% good and 50% bad, is it worth it to stay? Well, I certainly wouldn't stay in a relationship that is just as bad as it is good. If you're in a relationship that is 80% good and 20% challenge, it might be okay depending on what the challenges are. If the challenge is that your partner cheats on you once a month and you have to deal with the fallout and it's not changing, it may not be worth it to stay in the relationship. However, if you have a little conflict and differences of opinion, which everyone has, and you have the tools to work through it, then you'll be able to use your challenges to grow stronger and closer and improve your ability to overcome challenges. If you're someone who never takes responsibility for anything and you find you're taking responsibility for everything, then you'll find it's not an equal relationship and you won't feel good in it. A healthy relationship involves two people who have the emotional capacity for accountability, respect, and the ability to truly care about the emotional and physical well-being of the other. And if this is lacking, you're not likely going to be happy in that relationship. If your relationship starts out 95% good, but begins to rapidly deteriorate, you begin to see strong patterns of emotional immaturity, inability to communicate, lack of accountability, undermining, and other patterns that cause pain and frustration, it's worth very strong consideration. It's important to consider love bombing and how one puts his or her best foot forward in the first few months of a relationship. What you begin to see emerging after the initial honeymoon period is likely what you will continue to see in the evolution of that relationship. In fact, it's more likely that these patterns will get worse, not better. The likelihood of getting that 90% is extremely unlikely. After the honeymoon or love bombing stages of a relationship have subsided, you normally slip into the unconscious patterns of relating. And the unconscious patterns in which you relate don't change unless you consciously work very hard at changing them. The one thing you have to understand is that you can only work hard on changing your own patterns. You can't change the patterns of another person. That's their work. And if the other person is not consciously aware of any need to heal or change a defective pattern of relating, then they will be forever living with that pattern. The question is, can you live with it? If you believe you're the one with a defective pattern of relating and have seen that pattern showing up in all of your relationships, you may want to work on your own pattern of relating while still in that relationship. Say perhaps you have a tendency to be jealous, to be quick to anger, to withdraw affection and attention when you're upset, and lack the ability to communicate what you're feeling. It would be wise to get some help through therapy or coaching to change these patterns in yourself. But you must also be willing to ask yourself if your anger and jealousy are appropriate for the situation or inappropriate. I've had clients come to me wanting to work on their anger and jealousy. And as I dig a little deeper into their history, I find that they have a spouse who's been cheating on them. And in a case like this, anger and jealousy are appropriate for the situation. Some people tell me how they've become detectives, are very suspicious, and sneak into their partner's email and phone to see what they're up to. And these clients usually feel really horrible about themselves, as they've never seen this behavior in themselves before. They've never been so jealous or suspicious. And so they're coming to me to say, what's wrong with me? Why am I feeling this way? What's going on with me that I'm showing this behavior I've never shown before? But once again, as we dig deeper, we find that the true problem is that my client knows deep down there's something wrong with the relationship, but when she approaches her partner and tries to talk to him about it, he accuses her of being suspicious and jealous. She can't seem to get rid of this feeling that something isn't right, and so she's driven to check his phone while he's sleeping to find some kind of validation for how she's feeling. She will often find evidence of an intimate conversation going on between her partner and another woman. And if she confronts him after she has this information, she's often accused of invading his privacy, and the attention is focused on how jealous, suspicious, and untrustworthy she is, rather than the issue of her partner's affair. Once again, I'm using this woman as an example because I get so many women as clients that have this scenario. If a partner denies having an affair, which most narcissistic partners will do, it's very confusing for the innocent party because she senses something is wrong, but her narcissistic partner invalidates her and suggests that she has a problem with trust. She may come to me to work on her trust issues, and I tell her, "You don't have trust issues. You have an untrustworthy partner. You are right not to trust him. You are right to be suspicious." Now, if you have borderline tendencies, you may find that you are suspicious and jealous without cause because you feel insecure that your partner could ever really love you or be faithful with you. And so your mind is always seeking validation to confirm your insecurities. So in a case like this, you do need to work with someone to delve deeper into your own feelings of low self-worth and insecurity, or feelings of rejection and abandonment. Many people will sabotage good relationships due to their own fears and insecurities. So the key is to determine if your relationship is actually good or not. And you may need a little help with that. You may need some help supporting, you know, sorting through it, especially if you're unclear yourself. Another dynamic I will often see is when someone is a cheater and is either having an affair or thinking about it, he or she will accuse the other of having an affair. And this is a type of projection. So if you are unjustly being accused of cheating, you may be with someone who is either extremely insecure or cheating themselves or contemplating cheating. If you experience your partner, a lover, being more interested in someone else than they are in you, it doesn't mean there's something wrong or unlovable about you. It may simply be that your partner is seeking someone to distract him or her from the issues in the relationship he or she is blaming on you, or seeking someone who is closer to his or her level of emotional development. For example, if you're a health food junkie and you don't drink alcohol or party, and your partner is a junk food junkie who loves to drink and party, he or she may feel more comfortable with someone who eats junk food and likes to party all night. This is a bit of a no-brainer. But a lot of people miss this one. You may wonder why your sex-addicted lover leaves you for a stripper. Alcoholic lover leaves you for another alcoholic. If you have voiced disappointment in your partner's drinking, drugging, cheating, or sex addiction, and he or she leaves you for someone on his or her level, it just makes sense. The person who uses more drugs and is more sex addicted than your partner, or as sex addicted, or even a little bit, won't question his or her behavior. And he or she can hide the destructive behavior from themselves much longer. A shift in perspective will help you to see that you are being freed up to find someone who is much more on your level. And I tell you this because so many people are so confused when their lover takes a big step down, it seems. Well, why did he choose this person? This person's like a drunk on Skid Row. Why did he leave me for a drunk on Skid Row? Well, that's the answer to that question. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with that person's ability to live with themselves. So the quick answer to the question, why do I keep picking people who treat me badly, is because you either treat yourself badly or you don't believe you deserve anything better. When you can begin treating yourself with kindness, respect, love, and care, when you can begin really validating yourself and trusting yourself, when you can be really honest with yourself, you will not stay in relationships where you're not treated with kindness, honesty, and respect. You'll not stay in relationships with people who don't love you or care about you, and you will learn the difference between true love and false love. Make a commitment to yourself today to know what true love really is. Find the truth about the love you feel for yourself and your own ability to love and respect you. From this place, all else will fall into place. It may take some time, however. Do not look at your being single as a sign that there's something wrong with you. Perhaps it is a sign there is something right with you, as it's much better to remain single and healthy than to be in an unhealthy, toxic, or dysfunctional relationship. Make your health and wellness your utmost priority in life. And if you find your balance, your health or wellness being jeopardized in a relationship, it's time to take a step back and get back to you and what feels right for you. Anyone can make a bad choice in life, but it is those who have developed inner wisdom to know they can always make another choice that find their freedom. Consider choice your power. Live well. Love well. Be free. And may you be blessed. This concludes our episode 6 of Self-Loathing to Self-Loving. And if you would like any more information, if you would like some support or help, you can visit me on my website, pathbacktoself.com or narcissismfree.com, where I can offer consultations, counseling, hypnotherapy, information, books, all kinds of things to help and support you on your journey. And also stay tuned for our next episode of Self-Loathing to Self-Loving. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.